The election is over, and we'll look at the good side and the bad side of Donald Trump's win. Also, we revisit Steve Lawson. And the Gospel Coalition Conference 2025 has woke speakers John Piper, Alistair Begg, and David Platt on this slice of fresh bread. Welcome to Fresh Bread, a podcast ministry of Grace Bible Church, Gainesville, with Pastor Brandon and Pastor Keith. Well, thanks for clicking on Fresh Bread. Fresh Bread, we're bringing the truth of God's Word to a starving world. Fresh Bread Podcast 84 already. And today, our topic is, we're going to call this kind of a smorgasbord, or maybe like a buffet. We're going to hit on a few topics that we haven't touched on. This is the fall anyway, and so you do some fall cleaning before the holidays. We're going to clean up a few things that maybe we talked about earlier this summer and just kind of retouch up on them and see how things are going and some of the topics that we talked about. But we're going to focus mainly on the election. And yeah, I know it's, we said we were going to be done with that soon, but we just need to touch on the election 2024. It's over. It's done. The results are in, and we just want to talk a little bit about that. What does that mean for us as a church at Grace Bible Church and the church in general? We're going to talk about maybe the good stuff that happened and the good things that will happen and the bad things that'll happen. And we're going to go back and talk about Steve Lawson a little bit today. There's some things that came out on that this week, and also the Gospel Coalition Conference 25, which is called Alive Together. We have some speakers there, that the main speakers that have been invited there. And these are some guys that we in past podcasts have told you, watch where these guys go. They're moving to the woke side, but let's give them a chance and let's see where it happens to them. And so we've got John Piper, Alistair Begg, and David Platt, J.D. Greer. A lot of these guys are now at this conference. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But let's dive in. Pastor Brandon, how are you doing? I'm Pastor Keith. He's Pastor Brandon. Pastor Brandon is the man in the mandate. He's the one that brings it. He's the guy. We talk to him.
I've listened to a few of these podcasts, and I don't feel like I'm the man. I feel like I'm just a stumbling, bumbling. I'm the stumbling, bumbling pastor. That's what I am.
You know, I wouldn't argue with that. But no, here's the thing with you and I. What we try to do here is, look, we're not trying to give you our wisdom. We're trying to give you our wisdom from a biblical perspective, right? We have our worldview is biblical. This is what we're trying to do. We're looking at the world through these Bible lenses, right? I mean, I think you've talked about this. We've all heard you put on the glasses, the Bible glasses, and you look at the world through those, and that's what we're trying to do. So I think your wisdom is good wisdom because it comes from Scripture. This is where we're going to, as we're doing these podcasts, this is our main goal, is to bring the wisdom of God's Word as we look at life, as we try to shuffle through all these incredible, some of these problems look insurmountable. Like, what do you do with this? But when you really boil it down and you look at God's Word and you see it and you're like, yeah, okay, now I understand where this is going and how it got here and all these things. So, well, let's talk about the election. How did you feel about it? What did you do when you found out?
Well, so yeah, let me just say up front that last time we talked about the election, Keith, you called it. You said it would be a landslide. I thought that Trump would win. I thought it would be closer, and I thought that, you know, there would be room for, you know, the court cases and all of that. And I'm happy to say that Keith was right, and hopefully we don't have to go through any of that. Hopefully, the definitely singing a different tune today in terms of some of the things they've said, especially since they lost. And I'm thankful to hear that. I'm thankful to hear that they've changed, you know, because they were calling Trump a fascist, and, you know, that they were really making some really, I would call, you know, they were calling him a Hitler. They were making accusations that were unfounded. And so I'm thankful that that's stopped at this point. Now, that doesn't mean that they won't kick it back up between now and the inauguration, and I don't think that they're just going to sit back and do nothing. I think they're going to try to be as disruptive as possible, you know, even with the House and the Senate. I think the House, I haven't heard if the House has been affirmed to be in Republican control, but definitely the Senate is, and obviously the Supreme Court is, and now the President's. So I think that there could very well be some push back at some point. But, you know, for now, I mean, I'm thankful. I'm thankful for what happened. But as far as the election, I'm thankful it went the way it did.
Yeah, me too. And I think what we're seeing from the left side is that they're shell-shocked right now. They don't know what to do. But as soon as the dust settles, they're going to be right back berating Trump and calling him all these names again. But for now, we have this little pocket of everyone's a little stunned right now. And, you know, I appreciate you saying that I called the election, but really, I just had a feeling that things were moving in that direction. It just seemed like people were not going with Harris. Like they talk about, if you look at the Democrat side, they say the reason Harris didn't win is because, you know, people are bigots and men won't vote for women. And it's just, but really what it came down to was I call it a moron chip problem when, you know, someone couldn't speak correctly. All we got with word salads. The thing what Trump did is he hammered the fundamentals of politics, which are economy, you know, border, all these things. And Harris had no answers. She had nothing to offer. Trump was giving out, here's what we're going to do. Boom, boom, boom. And I think people were looking at both sides going, you know what? This guy at least is telling us what he's going to do. This side is like, well, I have a plan, but, you know, we're not going to reveal it. And so I just saw that. And when Joe Rogan kind of went over on the Trump side, I'm like, okay, I think we're seeing something happening here that we saw in 2016, which was different in 2020. And we can even talk about this, like, when you look at the final vote totals, Trump, you know, ended up with, what, 74 million. Harris had 71 million. We're missing 20 million votes from 2020. Like, where did these 20 million people go? Because remember, Biden had 82 million or 81 million?
81 million, 81 million plus. Yeah, I mean, it's a for sure, you know, that I think that it needs to be answered. I really do think that. I don't know if Trump will push that at this point. If he'll just move forward. But I really do think that it needs to be answered. That is a real issue. And I've actually tried to look it up a couple of times, but I don't know what percentage of the registered voters voted in 2020 versus the percentage that voted in 2024. I would suspect that that's a number that would be interesting to see, because it's clear that there was, you know, in terms of excitement, there was just as much excitement this year, you know, in terms of, you know, the passion behind the election. I think there was just as much passion that way in 2024 as there was in 2020. And, you know, for her to lose, I think, you know, 13 million votes, I mean, that's a massive, that's like 15% of the vote that she lost, 15% that she lost from what Biden got. I mean, I just it's astounding. And you know, when you look at the graph, I mean, you look at the number of votes starting, you know, from, you know, like 2008, 2012, 2016, 2020, 2024, 2020 is way out of line. Like it's a math anomaly. And which tells me that there's something going on with that number. And so what's interesting is I think Trump got somewhere near the same amount of votes this time as he got in 2020.
Yeah, he had 74 in 2020. I was just looking at this, right? You look at it, Biden set the all-time record for a presidential popular vote, 81 million in 2020. Trump had 74 million in 2020. Trump had 74 million in 2024. Obama had 69 million in 2008. Harris had 71 million in 2024. Clinton had 65 in 2016. Obama, 65. Trump, 62 in 2016. So, I mean, you're right. There's all of a sudden it just shot up in 2020. And the only thing I can think of is we all voted by write-in in 2020, right? Nobody was able to go to the polls because of COVID. So were they just more people voted because they could just vote from home? Was that it? Or,
well, I don't know. I mean, I think that's what needs to be. There has to be some level of investigation that says, how did this happen? Because there was something different. And it could have been that part of that difference is the write-in and, you know, people who are willing to do that as opposed to the vote of mail-in, that is. Could it be that was part of the difference? It's just significant.
Yes.
It's just significant.
Yes, the question is, where did these 20 million go? Now, some of them may have passed away during COVID, but that's a lot of people that are missing. Like, where did they go? It's an interesting question. Yeah. We'll have to dive into that someday. But let's get back to the 2024 election. Trump wins, and so now we have... And I guess I can ask you this question. Do you think he will, and it's sad to even have to ask this, but do you think he'll be alive in January to be sworn in, or do you think they're going to attempt another assassination on him?
Well, I mean, I said that last week that I didn't think that he would take office because they would. I think I've kind of moderated on that a little bit because, number one, the landslide. I mean, I think that it would be, he's such a popular figure at the moment. You know, he's riding a high right now. And I think that that would definitely be destabilizing to the country if that happens. So, you know, to be something that they would try to do, it would be way out of, I mean, it just wouldn't seem to make sense at this point. I mean, if it would have been close and they, you know, tried to go back through the kind of lawfare kind of idea, but I mean, it wasn't even close. So I think he very well could. I think I may have been wrong on that. I think he very well will. I think he will take office in January. And so at this point, as Christians, we need to be not thinking in terms of that, but I think in terms of like what happens if there's a destabilizing event. But now we need to be thinking in terms of how we respond to Trump himself and his policies.
Yeah, and like I said, when I made the predictions, I did it all for Peanut and Freddy. And if you don't know who they are, you just need to Google Peanut the Squirrel and Freddy the Raccoon, and you'll understand what I'm saying. Well, here, let's talk about the good things with Trump winning. This is again, for Grace Bible Church and the church in general in the United States and maybe even the world. I don't know, but the good side, I have these written down with the Trump win. The first thing, of course, is the economy. I think it's going to help our economy. I think, you know, right now we look at inflation and groceries and all these things. I think that's going to help, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think his economic policies are, I think his economic policies are going to lead to prosperity. If, you know, all things being equal, if he does, I think that we could very well see some pretty amazing prosperity going forward. Cutting the corporate tax rate, he's talked about lowering income taxes and even eliminating income taxes. You know, we'll see if he's able to do that, you know, going to some sort of flat tax, or he talks about using tariffs to cover the government. But even tariffs, I think are the goal would be to stimulate the economy here and manufacturing and bring us back to that level again. I think those are good things and would potentially put us back at a level of prosperity and hopefully get us away from the inflation and the difficulties that we've been facing.
Absolutely. The second thing I have written down on the good side here of Trump's win is, I think, freedom, right? I think we can all breathe a little easier with freedom. There'll be more freedom, especially for the church. I think we'll be able to do more evangelism and things like that now that Trump's in office.
Well, I don't, you know, it's interesting because we have to do evangelism either way.
Yeah.
Even if they tell us no. I think that we will not feel the pressure as much because of the protection of the First Amendment rights. I think that's a good thing in many ways. I do think that the church thrives when its times are difficult. And so, you know, what I worry about is that if the economy turns and goes, you know, to a better place and, you know, we end up seeing more money coming into our coffers, into our bank accounts, you know, people get complacent, and that's something we need to watch out for in that sense. In terms of First Amendment rights, yes, it's good. We should be able to speak out, but we need to take advantage of that and actually speak the truth. It's not as if Trump is where we want him to be in terms of his moral positions. I mean, he still has, you know, the exceptions when it comes to abortion. You know, there's still some things about him that I think are potentially problematic for our Christian worldview. And we need to be willing to speak out against those areas that he is off, you know, biblically.
Yeah, and you just touched on what you just said almost is what I have on the bad side of Trump's win, is that, and we can go through this again a little bit, but the church, I think in good times, the church gets lazy, and I think you nailed it, is that, you know, God has a reason for persecution. The church is actually strengthened and grows during times of persecution. In good times, the church gets lazy and people get lazy.
Well, I think that's where we are, at least in terms of the 2024 situation, where, you know, I think that we pulled back from the brink in many ways with some of the things the Democrats would have pushed. And if they would have won in 2024, I think it would have been on the last 4 years on steroids. Oof. In terms of some of the things that they were going to do, you know, with some of these movements, the LGBTQ, that whole alphabet soup movement, and the transsexual stuff that was going on in schools, and, you know, affirming teenagers, young teenagers, in terms of their wanting to be a different sex. I mean, there's so many, you know, basically transsexuals on, you know, different, you know, women's teams and competing in that way. I think that that would have just been on steroids. And I think this staves that off, hopefully, and gives us ability to sort of reset. And hopefully we see how close we came to the brink and we're willing to speak out, as, you know, speak the truth in love, you know, going forward.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we see 4 years here of, you know, the church has the freedom, like we said, to preach the gospel that we always do, but it the opportunity's there to give to missions, you know, keep those things thriving during these next 4 years. Some people have said that this is a good time now to buy guns. I don't know if we need to do that in the church, but I mean, what do you think about that? Is this a good time maybe to do things like that, to prepare in that way? You have 4 years. Is it like preparing for a hurricane or something? What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's been interesting, the whole prepper thing. I don't think that's the answer necessarily, in terms of like prepping, you know, getting, buying up ammo, buying up guns. And I don't know, as Christians, I don't even stockpiling a bunch of food. I've never been a big fan of that. It's something that I've thought about, but I've never been a huge fan of it, because we just need to trust the Lord. And yeah. I think there needs to be a preparation in the sense of preparing our minds and hearts for difficult times. And, you know, but when those things come, I don't know. I think that the answer is going to be in pulling together in communities, as opposed, and we've talked about that before, yeah. But pulling together as a church, and as, you know, other churches pulling together, you know, and helping each other. I think that's going to be more the answer than, you know, personally as a Christian stockpiling food and stockpiling ammo, stockpiling arms, stuff like that. I don't think that's the answer. And I don't think that's a Christian. I don't think that's what we should be doing as Christians. I'm not anti-gun. I'm not anti-ammunition. I'm not anti-stockpiling food, but I think that gets through. I mean, if they arrest you, then what is that going to help? So,
yeah. Well, this is kind of a piggyback on this question. It's not one that I had, but I'm just interested in how you feel about this. Do you think we're ever going to get to a point in America where owning a gun will be against the law?
Oh, it's possible. You think, you know, guns, you know, Second Amendment has been such a major part of the United States, and I, you know, the United States, there's definitely a lot of guns in the United States, but I think that, you know, we were probably on the cusp of beginning to move in that direction with the, you know, Democratic control, the way they handle things, especially if they had control of the Senate and the you know, the House of Representatives and the presidency, and then started packing the court. I think that could potentially happen. Europe is already there. So, you know, to think that we couldn't get there, I think I don't think that's right thinking, to think that we could never get there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of scary to think about that, but I agree with you. I think we're heading down that road in the next, you know, 10 years, maybe. Maybe sooner, I don't know. Okay, we're going on with the good side of Trump's win. I would say another thing that people could do, this is a good thing to do in the next 4 years, is pay off debt. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that's always a good thing, is to keep debt under control. You know, I think there's a proper way to use debt and a proper way to handle debt. But I think that people who get themselves in a position where they're, you know, they've run up credit cards and they're just paying minimal payments and, you know, barely surviving, you know, and living paycheck to paycheck, it's just not a good place to be as a Christian. And so we definitely need to be able to use that in the right way. And because, you know, there's times you need to use debt. I mean, if you have a medical issue, you know, we don't always have $10,000 set aside to pay off medical bills. So, you know, you have to, there's times when you need to go in debt, you know, sometimes to buy a house, many times to buy a house, you have to go into debt. But I think that we have to be careful in that and not be in a position where we're just living paycheck to paycheck and barely paying our debt payments. That's a no-go. And I think that as Christians, we should never be in that position. But for sure, you know, especially if there's some prosperity that's coming up, we need to use that as an opportunity. If we are in a position similar to that, we definitely need to use that as an opportunity to get ourselves, you know, right the ship.
Yeah, absolutely. That's good advice. As we go on with the good side of Trump's win, this is a big one for you and I. The good side is Fresh Bread will now get back to talking about doctrine more than the election. So that's a good one. Hopefully that we can we can do the five solas. We can do election. We can do all these things now again. So.
Well, yeah, I've laughed and I've quipped that we're done talking about the election. Now let's talk about election. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm ready to move on. I mean, I think it's been important that it's been critical that we talked about it. You know, even the episode we did on the, you know, how to vote, how we're voting, yeah. And, you know, the follow-up episode that where we talked about, you know, about it, I think that's good. But I think I'm ready. I know I'm ready to move on. And let's plow some new fields here over the next few months.
Yeah, the last thing I have on the good side of Trump's win is, and I'm going to ask you this, is this the end of the network and the news media? Because they were so pushing Harris and so anti-Trump, but the country voted against them. They didn't sway the election. Is this the end of the news media as we know it?
Well, I mean, I think it's got to change. I mean, I do think it has to. I mean, I would love to see us get back to something more neutral, when you tune in, you get neutral something. I say neutral. What I mean is they're challenging both sides, you know, where they're legitimately challenging what's going on, mm-hmm. and getting these politicians, you know, keeping these politicians honest on both sides. Because, you know, I think the danger that we have for this now that Trump has won is that, oh, well, now everything's going to be set right. You know, Messiah Trump is on the throne. And, you know, I think that's a grave danger for us. And that's the biggest issue that I see right now is thinking that Messiah Trump's on the throne and it's all going to be made right. But back to the whole media thing, I think that it has to change and we have to believe or have to be able to believe what the media is saying. And the way they have to do that is to get back to, you know, reporting the news and challenging both sides and, you know, challenging Trump, but also challenging the Democrats. And, you know, I don't think we should just trust everything that Trump says and what Trump wants to do. I think he needs to be challenged and I think he needs to be held accountable. And really the news networks have historically been what has challenged these people. And they've just become basically a propaganda arm for, you know, for whatever. And it's on both sides. I mean, you have the, you know, MSNBC, CNN, NBC, CBS, they're just propaganda arms for the Democratic Party and others that are on the right that are basically propaganda arms for the Republican Party. And I don't think that's healthy. I don't think it's healthy because it silos us and doesn't really open us up to the true issues and understanding the true issues.
Yeah. You know, when I was a kid, the newsmen, they all looked really haggard all the time, like tired. They all, you know, smoke cigarettes all the time. And I think the reason is because they were actually checking facts. They were actually trying to see if this is true or not. And nowadays it's like, yeah, they just report whatever they feel like reporting. And
I think what we've gotten into is that basically it sounds like what it seems like they give the talking points are given out and they don't ever challenge them. There's just just whatever the talking points are, they just parrot those and they don't challenge the source. They don't challenge them and ask tough questions. And they just sort of, even the debates were just, they were, it was a farce.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it just, it was obvious that it was, that the moderators were not unbiased. They were biased in one direction and we need to get away from that. So, you know, it's interesting because I think you're right. I think that it has to change. I think that the podcast culture, you know, where anyone can get on and start talking and start addressing some of these things, I think that's been incredibly helpful. As an example, the Glenn Becks, the Shapiros, the Rogans, and others who have developed these podcasts, I think that's been very helpful in terms of giving, you know, basically a different point of view than you're going to get on network news. And even Fox is, I don't think you could trust them either. So I've really appreciated the fact that we have YouTube, that we have, you know, these various platforms, you know, X, that we have these various platforms that we can actually know what, you know, hear unbiased, or if it's biased, we know it's biased, and, you know, you can, but at least they can say what they want to say and we can choose to believe it or not.
Yeah. How long has it been since you watched like ABC, CBS or NBC News?
Oh, I can't remember. I don't trust them. They're obviously biased.
Exactly.
And they're geared, and truly they're geared to low information voters. Yeah. Like people who don't want to know. They just want to be told what to believe.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I want to hear the truth. I want to hear the facts, and I want to be able to form my own opinion. And I don't want to be told what to think. And so, you know, I want to be able to hear the, you know, what's out there and be able to form an opinion on my own.
Yeah. Critical thinking is lost in our country right now.
Yeah. I was going to say, when I'm one of the more critical thinkers and that are out there, and I think I am one of the more critical thinkers, there's something wrong, because I don't think I'm a very like accomplished critical thinker. So,
well, we're over the age of 50. I think anyone over the age of 50 has a better critical, maybe even 40. I don't know. But yeah, we were taught in school, challenge things more. But I think now it's not like that. Everything's changed. So
sure.
We kind of touched on some of that. We're going to wrap up the election thing here pretty soon. We'll even talk about some of the amendments that in Florida. But for right now, the bad side, we kind of touched on all this. The church gets lazy with, you know, when Trump won, this is kind of the bad things that can happen the next 4 years. The church can get lazy. And you touched on this just a moment ago. There's Trump worship that can happen as well, right? He becomes a savior. Yeah. I even heard one Christian guy talk about this is going to usher in the golden age.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
And we have to avoid that kind of thinking. I think that's the kind of thinking that makes us complacent. And, you know, I think that there's something around. I don't think there's any less something potentially around the bend than what, you know, what we had it a week ago. So,
yeah, my whole motto through this entire election has been God's eternal plan of redemption is coming off without a hitch. I mean, we don't have to. There's nothing nothing that's going to happen that God hasn't ordained. So let's talk a little bit about
amen, brother.
Can I hear an amen? I see that.
I hear an amen. Amen.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Florida amendments that were important. We had the marijuana one, and we also had the abortion one, and they both lost. They actually both had more votes, right? They had...
Yeah, they both had a simple majority, but
yeah.
they needed to reach the 60% threshold, which I'm very thankful for, because I think they were both within a couple of percentage points of passing, which is a little bit scary that people that are walking the street, they, you know, have this completely different thought process than I do, which is not unexpected. I mean, it's certainly not unexpected, but I'm thankful for the 60% threshold.
Yeah, the abortion one was it 58 almost?
Like, yeah, I think so.
That was really close. And then the marijuana one, we're thankful because we have another 4 years of fresh air, but...
Yeah,
but they both of them did not pass, and so we are very thankful for that. Both those. Hopefully, they don't come back.
Well, they will. Unfortunately, I mean they're not going to stop, and that's why we can't rest. We have to. Matter of fact, I'm going to make this point in my pre-sermon comments tomorrow that we can't rest in our what we believe and. We need to develop relationships, you know, locally, especially with politicians and those who are with those who have, you know, authority, whether they're in office or they have influence with those who are in office. We need to be willing to you know, reach out to those people and exhibit and exert, you know, influence on them and, you know, influence them in the right way. Part of that is living a life before the Lord that is pleasing to Him, is salt and light to this world that we live in.
Yeah, abortion is a very, I don't understand how, and I think it's got to be Romans 1, as we look at it biblically, that how this has become such a battle cry for women, the right to kill and end the life of their own child is so important. And it's just so strange how that, you would think with all the modern science, with all the things that they can see, again, that they can see the life. With sonograms and all these things, you can see it and we understand it. But yet they don't care. They just don't care. And it's like, I don't know how we, even as a church, I mean, I guess we just start by showing, you know, Psalm 139 and going, walking through, when does God see life beginning? We see it at conception. We see that God is a God of life, right? Man is created in his image. God would never be pro-choice, but I don't know. Yeah, I guess we just keep hammering that, right? We just keep hammering the truth.
Yeah, I mean, the child sacrifice culture is alive and well. You know, that's what we desire, is to be able to sacrifice our children. I'm talking about as a culture, to stand against that. And yeah, and I will say, I just think it's an emotional argument, because it's being tied back to a woman's freedom to be able to have a job, to be able to work and be unencumbered, to be able to, unfortunately, to be able to be promiscuous and not have any consequences. And you know, just like men in that sense, because men don't have to deal with, I mean, they don't have to get pregnant and it doesn't affect their career. And so women want that. And it ends up being this big emotional argument. And I think that, I mean, it's funny, because it's sad, because as I said before, I think the last podcast, you know, unbelievers live in a constant contradiction in their mind. And so it's easy for them to contradict themselves, and, you know, that it's okay to kill a girl in the womb, but it's not okay to make a woman have to have a baby, which means that she can't, you know, that she's going to have to put her career on hold. I mean, that doesn't follow, and it's ludicrous thinking, but that's the way unbelievers think. And it's a constant contradiction.
Yeah. It's very sad. It's just, oh, it's frustrating. It's sad, but we know that as, you know, as we move forward in time and sin gets darker, that this stuff's going to happen, but we just have to keep fighting the good fight. So
absolutely. We need to fight for the widows and orphans. And that, you know, that's a, and that, that really covers anyone who's in need, any needy person. And I'm talking about truly needy person. We need to be the champion for those people. And there is nothing more needy than a baby in the womb when the mother doesn't want it and is willing to have someone invade that private, safe place, you know, with forceps in order to rid her of that child. And that's brutal. It's sinful. It's dark. And we need to be willing to stand in the gap.
Absolutely. I think, again, it's one, I don't want to go into it because we don't have time, but if we did, and I can edit this out, but it's almost like evolution. If you really analyze evolution, it is a theory and it's ridiculous. And so, but if you really look at what happens during an abortion, it's shocking and it's sad. But you don't want to see that. You don't want to know that part. You just want to know, hey, the pregnancy's over. You know, that's all you care about.
Yeah, it is sad. You put your own comfort and freedom above the life of a child.
Oh, it's just unbelievable self-absorption.
And we've talked about this before. I don't understand why we as a country don't incentivize adoption. Like, I don't understand why these girls that put themselves in this position. Okay, so everyone who has a child should want that child and raise it. I mean, that's just, in a perfect world, that's what it would be. I do recognize that there are times when that's just not true. And it's because we live in a fallen world. And yet at the same time, it's like, why are we not incentivizing parents, prospective parents who would love a child, to be able to adopt, even for free? You know, why aren't we covering that? So we're covering, you know, the cost of an abortion. You know, we're trying, you know, that's what the culture wants, is to cover the cost and make it available. Why not cover the cost of adoption and make that available? I mean, obviously the woman has to carry the child for the 9 months, and that's a sacrifice. But I think that's a small sacrifice to keep the baby alive and be able to have them where they need to be. So, and, you know, in terms of a loving home. And so I just don't understand. It's a contradiction. It's a contradiction that we just want to get rid of it. We just want it gone. And we don't want to deal with it anymore. We're just a few days of you know, feeling bad because of whatever physical, you know, that's, I mean, it is an invasive procedure, and, you know, but I'm willing to pay the money and have those few days of feeling terrible. And then we're, you know, now I'm back in business again. It's just terrible.
Yes. I look at abortion as, if you look in the dictionary under self-absorption, that's the definition right there. So
yeah. Yes.
Last word on the election, you were very surprised at Florida, were you not, with the, how conservative it's become?
Well, there's been a little bit of, and this, again, this was the news media, but it was even conservative media that was sort of seeing Florida as more pink than red.
Yeah.
And I think that narrative, I kind of fell for that narrative a little bit, that we were in danger. And what's interesting is when DeSantis won back in his first election, he won. I remember, I mean, had we gone that direction, we would be in a completely different state today. Like Florida would be completely different. And that election was very close between DeSantis and Andrew Gillum, I think is his name. He was a Democrat. He ended up getting caught with a male prostitute right after that. And I mean, he was a disaster waiting to happen. And he almost won that election. And so it hasn't been that long ago that we really were pink. And, you know, even back in the Bush-Gore days, I mean, it was just a barely on the conservative side. So Florida's always been in play in terms of, I mean, I say always, but generally in the past several elections has been in play. And I think that's because of prosperity. And I think it's because of freedom. And the fact that, you know, even during the COVID 2020 situation, you know, DeSantis opened up the state quicker than everybody else. And, you know, he really did a lot of great things, and we've continued to do a lot of great things. And there's a lot of very conservative politicians that, you know, Florida has a deep bench. And I think we're going to see some Florida politicians being involved in the Trump administration going forward.
Yeah. Florida was always kind of a swing state, and now it's almost solid red. So,
this election really did surprise me how red it went. And part of that is because the Hispanic population here, you know, the Cuban population and others have been so staunch toward conservatism. I would say they have leaned more toward conservatism than in other states. And so I think that the pattern that we have here, I think that it's a pattern that needs to be dealt with. I mean, California, I think, is in play at this point. If they can get the Hispanic population to realize that Republican values are actually more in line with their own, you know, values in general, in terms of family and in terms of some of the things that they believe, I think that if they get to the point where they realize that the Republican Party is better for them than the Democrat Party, I think that California may be in play. And so, and I've heard people say that California, you know, because the gap was closed in California quite significantly this election. And so I think that's a pattern that the Republicans really need to push, because the Hispanic population is pro-family and by and large, and how they live is pretty conservative.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's amazing how Trump did so much better with minorities than he did in 2020 or 2016. I mean, I think he jumped like almost 20 points
especially among black males.
Yeah. And Latinos.
Yeah. There's definitely been some things that have changed in terms of what those guys, I mean, they're beginning to see that, you know, that, that the Democrats are not for them, and they're not for masculinity at any level. It doesn't matter whether you're black or white or Latino or whatever. And so, yeah, I think that's a big story that I think will continue to be told.
Yes. And for the white men for Harris, I mean, we told you so. Don't join that group. It's not, they're not solid.
Yeah. They need to start supplementing some testosterone.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Election talk done. We're over. We're going to move to the next part of our buffet here. We're going to move into Steve Lawson. And some things came out this week that really surprised me. I don't know if it surprised you as much. I didn't know this about what happened with the Steve Lawson situation, but we found out this week that Steve Lawson was not an elder at the church that he was preaching. He was not even a member at the church that he was preaching virtually every Sunday. What is going on there? What do you think happened there, Pastor Brandon?
Well, I think it doesn't surprise me. I think if you would have asked me if he was a member or an elder, I probably would have said, I don't know.
Let me ask you something quick.
I will say, I thought it was odd. Like I thought that the relationship, I've always thought it was odd, and I never quite understood what was going on there. I know that they had asked him to, you know, came in, they asked him to pastor, which we found out now they didn't ask him to pastor. They actually asked him just to preach.
Yeah.
But it was just an odd relationship, and even how it kind of came to fruition.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you think, like, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, he's teaching at the master's seminary. Wouldn't part of applying for the job, or when you're given the job, wouldn't it be check off he's a member of his local church? You know, I think a lot of this, the professors at Master's University had to be, or even at the seminary, don't they have to be members of a church?
Yes. I mean, but I think he just got a free pass.
Wow.
I mean, it's because I think he had put himself in a position where, you know, he was he was a traditional pastor in the past. I mean, and so, you know, he was, before he left the church there in Mobile, he was a pastor and a member of the church. And so, this whole thing has been something that's been more of a recent development with him, since then. And I think he was somewhere around 2010. Don't quote me on that, but somewhere around 2010, he left that church in Mobile. So it sounds like he's just never been a member of a church since. And I think he just kind of got a free pass because he was already friends with MacArthur, always already friends with Sproul. He was already preaching and teaching at a high level, you know, in terms of these conferences and stuff. And I think he just leveraged that. And, you know, and so when he left Mobile, And by the way, I think we talked about this when we talked about Piper. He actually had, you know, quite a bit of problems at those churches. There were splits and major conflict that happened. He left those churches in a sort of a bad position as he left. And so that was a pattern that people should have seen, that he's not a guy that plays well with others. And the fact that he just wanted to come into this church, this Bible church in Trinity Bible Church in Dallas, that he just wanted to come in and be basically a perpetual guest. And that's a really poor ecclesiology and just a really poor understanding of the church. And it goes back to, you know, we talked about the celebrity pastor.
Yeah.
That, you know, that all of a sudden, just because you're a celebrity and you have all these followers, that you sort of set your own pace and there's no accountability. And I think that culture needs to be questioned, and we need to be willing to ask the hard questions. And really, ultimately, what this shows is God's wisdom, that the local church is what needs to be at the center of a Christian's life.
Absolutely. I'm going to defend Steve Lawson just a little bit here, is because he had, like you said, he has been a pastor twice. It didn't go well in both of those. So he did let Trinity know that he was not interested in being their pastor. Somehow he became the guest speaker almost every Sunday, and they paid him to preach. That's all they did. And here's the thing I don't understand, though. Why wouldn't he become a member if he's living in that area? At least become a member of the local church.
Well, I think at this point we know it's because, or it definitely seems as though he just didn't want accountability. And so becoming a member.
Right. And that's what kind of led to, I think, what happened, right? Because now it makes sense. As we read the story, we were kind of like, the way they worded everything, it said he wasn't fired as pastor. It was, he was taken away from all of his ministry duties.
Ministry activities.
Activities, yeah. And so it was kind of odd, but that makes sense. They had no authority to try to bring him back, restore him, because he wasn't a member and he's not an elder. And what I found out also is, you know, when you dig into the story right now, he's living in Tennessee right now, and his wife and his daughter are living in Dallas, and he's uncooperative. He doesn't want any part of what's going on. And that just kind of breaks my heart when you read things like that.
Yeah, this article that we read says he's exceedingly uncooperative.
Yeah.
And obviously, we don't know specifically what that means, but you know, the hope is that a guilty pastor would fess up and that he would confess, and you know, that he would say, this, you know, this was sin, and I was leading a sinful life and need accountability. He didn't do that. I think of there was a pastor that preached at TMS a few times in the chapel. I think Art Azuria. You remember him?
Yeah, I remember the name. Yeah.
Yeah, he was caught in an affair, and he handled it, at least on the outside looking in, he handled it well. Like, he, if you can even go now, I think, to his Facebook page, and it says that, you look, I sinned, and you know, it's a complete confession. There's an open letter, I think it is, and it's a complete confession of his sin, and then how many people he hurt, and he asked for forgiveness, and you know, and as far as I know, I mean, he's never really attempted any sort of comeback or anything, which, you know, obviously he's disqualified, and so we just haven't seen that, at least from what we could tell, we haven't seen that with Steve Lawson, and it's a sad state of affairs. But I think what we have to, as Christians, we have to recognize that it was the culture that led him to that, to be able to live that life and be in the position that he's in, and we need to understand that that we need strong local churches who are pastored by elders who love the flock and who are involved with the flock and who are being held accountable by each other and the flock, and ultimately by the Lord.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just mind boggling. When these came out this week, I was just dumbfounded that, he's not even a member of the church. He's not an elder. I just took that for granted. Yeah, my heart breaks too for this. You know, I love Steve Lawson was one of the big influences in my life, and it's funny as I look back, and I think we touched on this when we did our Steve Lawson podcast. And we're not trying to pile on him. We're just trying to share this information, and hopefully we learn from this as well as you do and our listeners. But we saw things in Steve Lawson, at least. I mean, you saw them before I did, you know, that he's kind of a diva, you know, he has the $1,000 pen and this, you know, the way the uniform and all these things. I kind of gave him a pass on a lot of that because, you know, MacArthur, he's with MacArthur, and obviously he's a good guy. He's not going to go the bad direction, but all those things were kind of warning signs that we should have looked at, and it did kind of lead him off astray. I think all these things led up to that, but there's little signs of these things happening that I think as pastors and as elders, we need to look at these things and learn from these, that when we see these things in men, these are things that you need to talk to someone about and say, hey, look, this is not, you're not heading down the right road.
Yeah, and I've seen him in different, I mean, I've obviously, you know, I think that was one of the things that it was surprising to me about being in seminary was the level of pride that I saw in some guys that really scared me. I don't want to, you know, this isn't a situation where I go on a witch hunt, but,
right,
you know, for those people who are in a position to hold others accountable, they need to do that. And it's their responsibility. So, you know, the people around Steve Lawson, especially, you know, as an example, you know, there's guys like Austin Duncan who was, you know, that he was around Steve Lawson a lot because of his position at, you know, heading up the D-men, the preaching D-men that he has the responsible for. So he was around Lawson a lot, and, you know, that he just kind of got a free pass. And, you know, there are other men that are, it's not just John MacArthur, but there are other men that are around Steve Lawson that should have said, hey, this isn't right. Brother, we need to talk about this. And what's your heart behind this? Instead, they celebrated some of it. And that grieves my heart that, as an example, celebrating the uniform, the suit, and how much he spent on the suit, and how we should be in the same position and do the same thing as pastors. I that just grieves my heart that, you know, the pens, they make a big deal about the pens and how much is being spent on pens. And it's just, that's just not pleasing to the Lord. And I just don't see how, I don't know why we let, you know, we went down that road, and we shouldn't go down that road anymore.
Yeah. We can't let, just because of who they're associated with, a free pass. And I think we've all learned a lesson there, and our hearts are still, you know, aching for Steve Lawson. We're still praying that he'll repent and be restored back into the Lord, and maybe never in ministry again, but at least, you know, that part. And yeah, I mean, that's my prayer, is that if I don't understand why he's in Tennessee and his wife's in Dallas, but we're praying that all that, you know, will be reconciled eventually in our heart. So wow, that's a tough one.
Yep.
And now, at the time we have left, just quickly, we're going to touch on we did a couple podcasts on John Piper and some other guys. We did one on Alistair Begg. We haven't really done one on David Platt, but we have touched on that. This is one I would also like to do. I think David Platt, if there's a new documentary out on him, and if you watch it, it's stunning. This guy should not be a pastor. He's not qualified. And we looked at John Piper and we said, watch out, you know, see which way he goes. He was at Shepherd's Conference last year, and that was kind of what triggered it for you and I, because we were like, this guy's moving to the woke side, but Shepherd still invited him, but they haven't invited him back this year, which I think there's a reason for that, because the Gospel Coalition has a conference in 2025. It's called Alive Together, and it's bringing people together. They're talking about there's too much division in the church and we need to come together, and it's just going to be a love fest, I think, is what it's going to be. But there are some speakers there that we remember we told you to watch out which way direction they go. John Piper, Alistair Begg, David Platt. Interesting, John Piper and Alistair Begg have a Shepherd's Conference connection because they were both scheduled to teach there last year. And then I don't know if you guys remember what happened to Alistair Begg, and he talked about that homosexual marriage. All these things, and we just talked about David Platt and how I don't think he's even qualified to be a pastor, but they're all speaking at this Gospel Coalition, again, it's called Alive Together, and we told you to watch out for them, and they are all moving more towards the woke side. So, Pastor Brandon, what do you think of all this?
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting because John Piper was one of the ones that, you know, said he could never vote for Trump, and you know, I think there's a connection, you know, that for whatever reason, I think that he is definitely one of those guys that's influenced by the woke gospel. And, you know, I think he says a lot of great things and sounds really good at many times. But I am suspect of where he's at and, you know, why he wants to associate with some of these other people that he's associating with. And, you know, like you say, the J.D. Greers of the world, the David Platts of the world, and guys that have been clearly moving in that direction. I just in the woke direction, and you know, and obviously anti-Trump, which is a big deal to me, because not that they have to vote for Trump, but I do understand the dilemma, and certainly don't want to just make that sort of the gauge for whether I can have fellowship with a guy or not. That's not the issue. The issue is that when they begin to celebrate, you know, as an example, that was the issue with Alistair Begg. He was celebrating gay marriage by participating, by bringing a gift and saying that he would attend. And that was a problem. And then, you know, we have that same kind of idea with Piper, who, you know, he wants to basically rub elbows with people who are more on the woke side. And, you know, I just can't trust him. I can't mm-hmm. trust that. You know, if I get it, he was at Shepherd's Conference, but I don't trust it. I don't trust where he's at, and I don't trust where he's going. And then, you know, obviously guys like David Platt are already that direction. And you know, it certainly doesn't surprise me with him, David, are in that position. It's really Begg and Piper that make it very difficult, because they, you know, obviously have been so solid for so many years, or at least outwardly solid. And so to see those guys fall off the wagon, so to speak, has been heartbreaking. Certainly been heartbreaking. The church has been heartbreaking for many years now with some of the things that's happening. And it's hard to even, you know, the list of people that we can trust is getting shorter and shorter. And, you know, and I don't think that, I'll be honest with you. I think that this whole, you know, the fact that Trump was elected, I think the danger is us letting our guard down, thinking that sort of the battle's won. And I don't think it is. So,
yeah. Absolutely. You know, it's interesting when you look at Shepherd's Conference. I mean, they had John Piper last year. They had invited Alistair Begg. Steve Lawson was always a mainstay. And the Shepherd's Conference has kind of taken a hit on some of these guys. I mean, it'd be interesting to see if John Piper's ever asked back. I'm not sure he ever will now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what their thinking is on it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I sort of doubt that he would be, at least for a long time. And he's getting up, you know, pretty old, getting up there. So, you know, that's been an interesting dilemma, because for Shepherd's Conference, because, you know, there's guys, a lot of guys in the past that are no longer going there, with, you know, Al Mohler is another one. Legan Duncan is another one.
Yeah.
that are no longer going, you know, no longer go. Piper, he came back last year. Now Begg, Alistair Begg. And yeah, the list seems to be getting shorter. I mean, it may come down at some point that you get an invite.
No, they talk about an A speaker and the, you know, B speaker. I'm a Z. I'm not even in the alphabet. So that would be funny. Anyway, well, that's about all we have for our smorgasbord for our podcast today. Is there anything that we didn't touch that you wanted to touch on, or do you think we hit everything?
I think we hit everything. Yeah, I just want to emphasize that I would like to move forward with some, you know, some theological topics going forward. And I'm hoping that we can kind of hit the reset button a little bit here and really dig back into theology and try to help in that way. I certainly don't regret that we've talked to, you know, about politics, and I think it's been needful and hopefully helpful for our listeners, you know, that they know kind of where we're at. And it helps me too to think through and talk through what I believe. And it helps to be wrong sometimes too. Like you think that this is what may happen, and then all of a sudden it goes a different way. I'm not a prophet, and you know, I'm nothing special. Yeah, I mean, I think that I'm thankful to be able to do it. But going forward, I think, you know, hopefully we can, you know, focus on some theological topics, and you know, there'd be fruit that would come from that.
Absolutely, and I think what, like I said at the beginning, what we try to do with Fresh Bread is we're trying to bring the truth of God's word to a starving world, which means we're looking at events and things through the Bible. And so the election coming up, this was a big election. And so that's, I think, why we spend so much time looking at it biblically. What do we do? How do Christians vote in this one? Because you have some evangelicals on this side saying, you need to vote for Harris. She's the one. Then you have people here saying, no, you got to vote for Trump. So we were trying to say, look, let's just sort through all this. Let's look at it biblically. Which one would be a better fit? And, you know, we came up with Trump because the lesser of two evils, but yet, This is what we were trying to do. And so that's why I think we spend time on it. And if there's anything that happens in the world, or, you know, major things that go on, we want to try to help people understand. We, like you said, it helps us, you and I both understand when we walk through it and talk through it. So we're hoping that people who listen have that same experience as well.
Absolutely.
I was going to ask you that now that this is over, and I did predict it, could I be called a prophet?
Yeah, I mean, you, if you're willing to take the stones.
You've been listening to Fresh Bread, a podcast ministry of Grace Bible Church Gainesville. For more information, go to gracegainesville.org. And thanks for listening.